Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. Mimi Winsberg says she's seeing encouraging results in providing mental health services via telehealth. She's the chief medical officer and co-founder of Brightside Health, a telehealth company focusing on mental health needs. Her firm offers services for patients with depression, anxiety, and even suicidal ideation. She talks about the opportunities of using telehealth to reach more patients with mental health needs. Thank you for joining us today. We're talking with Mimi Winsberg, the chief medical officer of Brightside Health. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Could you just give us an overall view of Brightside Health and the services you provide?
Sure. Brightside Health is a national telemental health company. And, you know, our goal is to deliver life-changing mental health care to individuals who have everything from mild to severe clinical depression, anxiety, other mental health conditions. We are even treating patients who have elevated suicidal risk right now. So we're working with commercial payers. We're live in all 50 states, and we offer psychiatry services as well as therapy services.
You're dealing with, obviously, with people with some pretty serious needs. Talk about dealing with patients with suicidal ideation via telehealth. What is the challenge, and also what is the potential in terms of helping some of those patients?
Well, in terms of potential, we know that suicides have doubled in the last 50 years. So every other leading cause of death in the U.S. has decreased, but suicide is, we're seeing rising rates of suicide, and that for every person who attempts suicide, there are many, many more who are considering it. So it's an important issue to address in healthcare right now. I think what's noteworthy is that a lot of times these patients will get bounced around from provider to provider. People are reluctant to treat them in the typical outpatient setting. And we have, you know, few inpatient beds and you know, higher level of care services available. Even for outpatient services, more than half the counties in the United States don't have a single psychiatrist. So we have an access problem, and we have a problem of suicidal patients not being often able to get the appropriate care. We've launched a relatively novel program at Brightside called Crisis Care. And what it does is it uses an evidence-based program called the CAMS program, the Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality, to treat patients who have active suicidal ideation. And we're delivering it through a digital model over telemedicine. So we've digitized the CAMS program. So it's basically a high-tech program that's also high-touch, in that you're meeting with a provider at least once weekly over video, but you're using these digital tools that can really help reduce suicidal ideation. And we're seeing really great results with this. With of the patients we've enrolled, most are better within six sessions.
That's really encouraging to see that kind of promise. And there have been some other studies that have shown some encouraging results from telehealth in terms of dealing with behavioral health issues, including things like substance use disorder. Are you surprised to see so much success via telehealth, or is this what you expected to see?
It's not out of line with my expectation, and my expectations have evolved over the years. I think there was a time where we thought that many of these conditions couldn't be treated successfully over telehealth. The pandemic forced us, of course, to try to address conditions that we wouldn't otherwise have addressed over telehealth. And what we're seeing is that telehealth can actually provide some benefits. Yes, you can't do a physical exam over telehealth, but in behavioral health conditions, that's often not necessary, most of the time not necessary. What you can do with a telehealth platform is incorporate other features that really can drive great outcomes. These are things like measurement-based care, remote patient monitoring, so tracking where a patient is in between appointments, real-time alerts to their provider to indicate when they might be in distress, having side effects, having symptoms that need a more immediate appointment, responsive appointment scheduling. So rather than adhering to a particular cadence of appointments, you can respond to the patient at the time of need. And basically this notion of a closed loop platform where patients can see their progress over time and engage with their provider through other tools besides just the video visit, messaging, clinical decision support, a more precise approach to symptom cluster analysis. All these things offer confer advantages, from the traditional brick and mortar system that, I don't think we could have anticipated 10 years ago.
Is there an advantage also in a telehealth appointment in that the patient is in their house, or maybe they're in a cubicle at work where they step away, but they're more comfortable because they didn't have to spend half an hour just going there? And especially if they're at home, they might be a little bit more inclined to be more relaxed and be a little bit more at ease in familiar surroundings to talk about some of the things that are bothering them. Is that something that you see at all?
For sure. It's it really increases convenience of the appointment, for one. You don't have to worry about leaving work, arranging childcare, commuting. So it creates a lot less friction to be able to just log on and have your appointment. For some people, doing the appointment from home may make them feel more comfortable than being in a clinical setting. If you live in a small town, just having your car seen in the parking lot of a community mental health center might be stigmatizing. And so it can reduce stigma to be able to get your care from home and that it's more private.
You actually hit on the question I was going to ask about this, the whole issue of stigma in terms of that's still there for people. So I'm guessing that's something that you see fairly often in terms of gives a little bit of relief to patients that they can talk without necessarily bumping into somebody from work or church, walking into a medical office or something?
That's right. I mean, we like to think that there's been a lot of work to be done around reducing stigma for mental health conditions, but the truth is it still exists. And so telesolutions can provide a more private way to get care that, feels secure and less subject to community scrutiny.
Do you see any difference in success among like either age groups or different people from different backgrounds in terms of their use of telehealth? Is it more successful, say, with younger folks or older folks or folks of different backgrounds?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because initially we saw really the most adoption between patients of the years of 18 and 44. So that was our sweet spot of, younger patients who are probably more digitally savvy and more willing to adopt these kinds of solutions. But we've actually published a few papers in peer-reviewed literature showing that our patients who are 60 and over do just as well on our platform as the younger patients do. And we've also looked at more underserved patients, those that are reporting income of $30,000 a year or less. So looking at some of these social determinants of health and shown that those who are reporting income of less than $30,000 a year are doing just as well as those reporting income of $60,000 or over. So we're able to effectively treat patients across age demographics, across socioeconomic demographics. And I think this is important as telehealth begins to expand into, let's say, the Medicare and the Medicaid space.
I wanted to get back to something you said earlier, which I know is not a new fact and certainly not a new fact for you, but just the idea of access that half the counties in the United States don't have a practicing psychiatrist. I mean, that is a staggering statistic to somebody who might not be familiar with it. And it just sort of underscores that this access issue is not going to be solved overnight. Even if you start getting more people into medical school trained now, it's going to be years before you really chip away at that. So how important is telehealth going to be in terms of a solution to try and expand access to those who need behavioral health?
It's very important. What telehealth does is it takes that geography problem that you described, or it can take that geography problem out of the equation. So the laws of telehealth dictate that the provider has to be licensed where the patient sits. So if I have an Arkansas license, I can treat a patient in Arkansas regardless of where I'm located. what that does is it levels the playing field, essentially, so that patients in more rural, less served areas can get access to good providers who may live out of state, but have a license in their state. What I would just underscore, though, is that access, while there's tremendous focus on access, and it's very important, we think of access at Brightside, we think of access as table stakes. And we of course, provide access. We get patients in, the majority of our patients get an appointment within 72 hours from the time that they start seeking one and land on our one page and begin filling out a questionnaire. So we're getting people in 48 to 72 hours and less than 48 hours if it's necessary. And that we think of as just table stakes. What we're really interested in is driving quality with the telehealth. So leveling providers up by giving them access to supervisors, clinical decision support, tools to look at how their patients are doing in between appointments, the ability to message patients and have patients message them in between appointments. All these things can raise the level of quality in addition to providing that so important access.
Yeah. What advice would you offer to hospitals or health systems that are looking to expand their behavioral health offerings through telehealth?
Yeah, this is a great point because, you know, we are seeing more willingness to, on the part of larger health systems, to work with telehealth solutions. We're also seeing payer adoption of these telehealth systems. Brightside, for instance, works with a number of national commercial payers, and we're in network with Cigna, Aetna, United Optum, for instance. So we're seeing payers not only work with telehealth systems, but actually invest in telehealth systems and pouring their own venture dollars into companies, particularly in the behavioral health space. So I think there's an opportunity to work with let's say academic institutions, which may be seen more as tertiary care systems and have very, very long wait times for patients to get in. I think there's an opportunity to work alongside commercial payers and commercial health systems that may be struggling to meet their access demands right now.
What needs to be done in terms of training as we start to see telehealth become more part of the regular offerings of healthcare systems? How do you train people to do telehealth effectively?
Yeah. Well, luckily, telehealth itself is not, you know, seeing a patient over video isn't very different than seeing a patient in person. There are certain tricks of the trade. But what we're seeing is a lot of training programs are actually adopting digital medicine modules and incorporating it into their thought leadership and training. And that's very exciting to see. I get a lot of residents approach me interested in learning more about telehealth and how to develop a telehealth career. And I think we're going to see more and more of this it getting incorporated into residency training programs, therapy training programs, nurse practitioner training programs.
Are there a couple of tricks of the trade you could share in terms of like what you have to look for, maybe that might be different in a telehealth appointment versus an in-person appointment?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There are certain things that you don't capture over telehealth. So you get a nice up close view of the person's face, but you may not see the way they move or their entire body or little details about them. And so it's important to ask certain questions that you wouldn't otherwise ask. If somebody walks into my office and they smoke 2 packs a day, I don't really even need to ask them if they're a smoker because you can tell they smell like cigarette smoke. Over telehealth, that wouldn't be obvious. And so that's just one particularly obvious example. But I think there are things that you want to maybe get more clarity over in telehealth that you might take for granted because they're part of the normal social cues in an in-person interaction.
Do you get to see a little bit more of a window into the patient's life through telehealth? Like if somebody's at home, maybe see a picture of a family member or even a pet that walks in?
That's right. You do see them in their environment. And that was something when I was treating patients in person. Sometimes I would ask them to bring in a picture of their home environment, particularly if they were working on an issue like having too much clutter or something like that. This way you do get to see patients in their own home environment. And I think that can provide important context if a family member wants to join the appointment to provide some collateral information, it does make it easier to do it as a telehealth appointment.
Well, I guess in late December, Congress and the Biden administration approved a 2-year waiver that would extend telehealth programs through the end of 2024, offering some relief for some health systems, but still a lot of health systems and healthcare advocates and telehealth advocates are pushing for more permanent reforms. What would you like to see Washington provide to help make sure that telehealth is available for both health systems and for patients?
So I think we saw an absence of regulation happen during the pandemic where, you know, it was a little bit of Wild West. Things needed to be taken into the tele mode because of the public health emergency. Now, as the PHE has is winding to an end, we are needing more guidance and regulation going forward around things like controlled substances. I think that some systems need to be modified. We need a telehealth registry, so we need a way to safely prescribe controlled substances over telehealth. And we need a way to be able to integrate brick and mortar institutions with telehealth. So like a click and mortar solution where we can work successfully with brick and mortar institutions when there is need and still be able to provide important telehealth care to patients who otherwise wouldn't have access. And this is includes, you know, addressing the opiate crisis. So a lot of patients may find themselves without access to their medication to manage their opiate addiction. And so this is an important area where we're going to need to see government regulation.
We've seen a lot of talk about substance use that rose in the pandemic. Are we still seeing that? Are you still seeing evidence of that, that more patients are struggling with the use of substances like opioids or other substances as well?
Yes, I think that along with the suicidal ideation problem that I was describing earlier were both unfortunate emergence of the pandemic. You know, we've seen an increase in loneliness, an increase in substance and alcohol abuse, more suicidal ideation, rising rates of suicide. We do have a mental health crisis on our hands, and we do need tools to address it.
Is it the pandemic and the loneliness you talked about? Are those really the driving factors of the rise in suicidal ideation, or are there other factors at play as well?
It predates the pandemic, so it's hard to pin it all on the pandemic. I think the pandemic, you know, may have been, a large contributor, but I think that we're seeing there are other factors at play too. Economic disparity, probably, increasing use of social media among youth seems to prevent more intimate connections otherwise. And so there are a number of factors, I think, that have contributed to this. And some of these statistics predate the pandemic.
Well, Brightside's already in 50 states now. What's ahead for the company? I mean, you're already all over the place. What do you see as sort of the next steps of the company and where you see the company going in the next couple of years?
Yeah, great question. So yes, we are treating patients for psychiatry services, therapy services in all 50 states. We've launched crisis care, and that's for patients with active suicidal ideation. And we're live in 30 states now for crisis care. So we're continuing to expand that into all 50. We are continuing to try to serve greater segments of the population. So you'll see us get into the Medicare space. You'll see us start to treat teen population from 13 to 18. We're currently 18 and over. And those are primary areas that you'll see us expand into. And then we'd like to, you know, we always say that our work isn't done until we can treat Medicaid patients as well.
I wanted to ask about the teen population, because there's by all accounts, the hospital are seeing more patients with mental health emergencies over the last couple of years. That would seem to be an area where there's certainly need to, again, provide more health and more access to care for young people that are struggling.
Absolutely. Yeah, we know it's an area of high risk, high demand. And we're working actively to solve that.
Do you see telehealth as another tool to help address health equity in terms of closing disparities for some underserved populations?
I do. And I think that gets back to this notion that we can effectively treat patients, more underserved patient populations through tele. Most people have access to a smartphone. So are there technological limitations? Yes, but fewer than one would think. And I think that with access to a smartphone, you can reach people where they are. And that might be geographical limitations, economic limitations, age limitations. And so I do see it smoothing out the access to care over time.
Now, you're a co-founder of Brightside Health. So I'm just curious, what lessons you learn when you're helping to build a company? What are some of the lessons you've learned along the way?
Yeah, so many lessons. I think it's important to stay flexible and adapt to changing markets. And I think it's also important, there's an old saying in medicine that I think applies to companies too, which is that not making a decision is making a decision. So in other words, if you don't make a decision to treat a patient, you're effectively making a decision not to treat that patient. And so you need to evaluate your decisions, the things you're choosing and the things that you're not choosing, very, very carefully as you move forward, and where you put, your investments and your attention ends up being really important over time. We at Brightside, for instance, made the choice during the pandemic, not to prescribe controlled substances, despite the fact that the Ryan Haidt Act was temporarily lifted. I'm very glad that we made that decision in retrospect. And, we wanted to be able to work with a regulatory system that we were looking forward and thinking, well, this is just a temporary situation. We want to make sure we have our ducks in a row to be able to deal with whatever comes forward in the future. And I think you do need to keep your eye on the future in terms of being able to adapt to what will be the new normal.
What is going to be the new normal, actually?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, I don't have the crystal ball, but we've certainly seen a lot of change over the last few years.
I mean, do you feel optimistic about Brightside's prospects going forward, considering the overwhelming needs for more access to mental health and behavioral health?
Oh, I feel very optimistic. I mean, we were poised to deliver great quality telehealth prior to the pandemic. And so when the pandemic hit, that was an opportunity to be able to reach more people. I think I'm very optimistic about the work we're doing right now with crisis care. I think we're going to see this notion of intermediate care become very important over time. We don't have enough hospital beds to treat all the patients that are experiencing suicidal ideation. IOPs and partial hospitalization programs are expensive. Brightside is meeting this need by filling a gap that exists in current care right now. So I'm very optimistic about the offerings that we have and the ability to meet people where they are with the current needs that they have. And yeah, I think you'll see good things to come in the next couple of years.
And maybe just a final question. There's been so much talk about the mental health crisis. What at the federal level should be done to help deal with some of these really daunting challenges you've just outlined?
It's a not an easy 2-minute answer, I would say that we can start to begin with this notion that telehealth needs to have a seat at the table, really. I mean, even though that's an overused expression right now, and that we need to design a telehealth registry to have telehealth not be considered as just an alternative that might have just been adopted during the pandemic, but real care going forward, and to sort of put the processes in place to have an ability to check across states what is happening for a patient and be able to ensure that care is delivered securely and with high quality.
Pretty good wrap up for a very weighty topic on that, because you're right. Doesn't lend itself to a 2-minute answer, but you did a great job summing that up. So it's excellent. Well, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really enjoyed the conversation and really Appreciate your insights and look forward to see what else Brightside's going to be doing in the near future.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MGH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.